you always give me the hardest names to say. How do you pronounce this one?
One last time, very slowly. It's Mark.
It's gotta hurt!
Damn you! You gave him the easy one!
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! God is helping!
We are the wild and pretty guys!
Well, they're both festive, aren't they?
Joyeux Noël!
And we are the Festive Foreign Film Fans.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. No matter what part of the country.
Or the world.
Or the world. I should. That's what I actually meant to say. Right, Bob? Because I don't think we've shared that. We've learned that our podcast is being listened to all over the world.
Yes. Which is what we had hoped.
Yes.
Yes. And it. How many countries did we?
23, I believe.
Yeah, 23 countries.
So
our 23 fans in those countries, please tell your other countrymen to listen up.
Wow, that it seemed like a good moment. But anyway, how are you today, Bob?
I am good. And you know, if you think about it, if you are in some other country and you're waiting for us to get to your country, cover it in one of our episodes, I promise we will, right?
We'll get there.
Yes, yeah. You know, we're trying to get through the whole map.
Yep. We're not on a plane. We're on a train.
Oh,
you see what I did there?
What a transition. Yeah. What are you talking about there, Mark?
Well, we'll get to it, but our movie today has a train as the main backdrop, but we'll get there.
And it's what we like about this movie is because we're coming off the one we just talked about last episode, which really I really liked. But it was very violent. Maybe wouldn't be appropriate for some of our listeners. This one, though, is a complete opposite. Oh, it's a comedy, and it's fun to find a comedy, a foreign comedy that everybody could relate to. It's very funny, and it really made me think about, watch this and go, this is great. This is a great movie, and I think about all the, when you look at these lists that come out at Christmas, like top 5 Christmas movies or right. The most popular Christmas movies up there. And all of the ones, it's like Christmas Vacation, mm-hmm. Elf, mm-hmm. You know, Scrooge, comedies.
They're all funny.
They're funny, boy. And you're like, you know, normally, like when I talk about people, like during the year and say, oh, you know, what series are you watching? Or what's a good movie you've seen lately or whatever? It tends to be more dramatic.
Yeah.
You know, people are more interested in the dramatic plots and all that. But when there gets to Christmas, it's all of these happy comedies. And so is it Christmas or what is it that?
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. I do think at Christmas, when we're watching Christmas movies, it is about being happy. I think it's about love, right? Mm-hmm. Think about the Hallmark movies, right? Typically, there's a romance that's part of the Christmas story. The Biltmore Christmas last year was, you know, your typical love movie and transcending time to be in love. So I think that's what drives it, Bob, because right, if you think about even the Oscars, not that that's the epitome of a good movie, but like I think there's only been 8 comedies that have ever won an Oscar.
I don't even think I could name one of them.
I think when it comes to the Oscars, I think people want to relate. They want to, historical fiction is often popular, right? Because they're telling maybe a new story or a different element of some event, but yeah, it's fun. I love comedies. I
and you know, the one part you hit on, and I hadn't thought about it, at the holiday time, often you want to bring family together and watch right. something that everybody can watch. And if you think about it, comedies lend towards that right. versus, you know, like you talk about the Academy Awards, it's the serious films. I mean, I often think that you get this sense that they kind of snub their nose at the comedies. Oh, like, you totally. Know, they're not as, totally. You know, serious and they're not. But, you know, when you quote movies or talk about scenes, mostly it's from funny movie. You know yeah. what I mean? You're it's yeah. it's rare that you go, well, that reminds me of, you know, something from Schindler's yeah. List. Let me relate it to you.
Right. Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
Tonight's movie is 100% comedy. It is on a train. It's 19. So think about this. It's 1945. And there's a bunch of people joining the train. It's filmed in black and white. All right. The war in Europe is over.
And I think is it filmed in black and white to kind of give it that feel like it's from 1940? Yeah.
I totally think, right. Because good point. Because the movie was made in 2003. This is the passenger list, and we'll talk about the actors. But getting on this train is a failed author and critic, right, who wants to go out and make the world a better place. A soldier who's on the wrong train,
my favorite character.
Oh my God. There's a doctor who wants to murder his wife, and he's brought his lover along with him to help murder his wife. There's a gay man with and a couple there, but one gay man hates men. And women, actually. Yeah, he just hates everybody.
Yeah, he just hates everybody, yeah.
And there's two nuns on there that are having religious doubts.
Oh, they're funny, too.
So there you go. That's who's going to be on this train ride tonight. Let's talk about the actors a little bit. There is a lot of them.
Yes, there is.
But exactly. We're just going to highlight a few of them. First one is Gustav Hammerstein. He plays Gunnar. Gunnar is the writer who's trying to make the world a better place. But Gustav Hammerstein is a Swedish actor of TV and movie and theater. He's best known for the English language film Bruno with Sacha Baron Cohen. He played Lutz, who's Bruno's sidekick. He also had a small role in M. Night Shyamalan's Old in 2021 about a group of people who find themselves aging rapidly on a secluded beach.
Now, both of those English language, have you seen either of them?
No,
I haven't. It's surprising because... Yeah. You know, I like Sacha Baron Cohen in limited, you know what I mean? I don't think I can watch him in everything, but I like him in limited things. And I tend to see M. Night Shyamalan's. I'm interested in what kind of curious thing he does. And some of them don't make it, but I'm surprised I missed this one.
As well. And then the other actor is Robert Gustafsson. He plays Soldaten, and he's the soldier. Robert plays the hapless soldier in the film that provides many of the comic moments. He's a Swedish comedian, a member of a comedy troupe called Killingnagen. He's been called the funniest man in Sweden, and I think I agree. He's well known for his range of voices and accents, his physical comedy, and also appeared on Norwegian TV. He's dubbed several English language films, but not appeared in many of them. And then the last person we're going to highlight is Peter Dahl. He plays Darhinton, but we'll call him conductor going forward, but that's what that word means. But he's a Swedish actor and writer. In fact, this film was written and directed by him.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I mean,
and he's written, directed, and he's in it.
Along with playing the conductor, he has also written and directed several other films, including a popular TV series called Laurie. It's a Swedish TV series. He did appear in the English language film called The Snowman with Michael Fassbender and Val Kilmer. And I saw that movie, but I don't remember even looking at his face. So I'll have to go back and look at that some other time, because in the movies, he's very good as the conductor.
He's a straight man, but he's funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then the other actress who I recognized who played Maria, Anna Bjork. And she's in, I think, the girl with the dragon tattoo. I think she's in the very first one. She plays one of the rich sisters that is involved. So when I saw her, I'm like, I know her. She doesn't play a big part. But
which role does she play in this movie?
She's Marie. So she is the...
She's the girlfriend?
She's the girlfriend of the doctor.
Okay.
Yeah. But let's talk about this movie. I mean, I'll tell you, this is one of those movies where there is so many characters, so many things happening. I'll do my best to summarize this, Bob. Feel free to sort of dive in there. But let me just talk about, like, the main people, right? So there's Gunner. We talked about Gunner, and he's just thinking he's an author. In fact, the movie starts with Gunner writing his employer a resignation letter, telling him that he's loved being a critic. He's loved the fact of this publishing house. He loves that this publishing house has published books for him that have made no money. He wants to do more, right? The war is over. He wants to help recreate a new Europe, right? And he goes on and on. And he goes, oh, and P.S., I would never, ever recommend the book Pippi Longstocking, right? I'm thinking like, wow, okay. But he gets done this eloquent letter, and he spills ink all over it, right? So you're kind of getting this little foreshadowing of like, this guy's maybe a little bit of a klutz. So that's Gunner. There's Henry and Karen. They're married. Henry's the doctor. Karen is his wife. Maria, who we just talked about, is the girlfriend of Henry. There's Pomp and Sixton. That's the gay couple. And there's the conductor. And then there's also the unfortunate soldier. And then there's two nuns. So there's just a lot going on. But the movie's like...
And then the two nuns have all the refugees with them, right?
The refugees, yes. Yep. They have a group of refugees. So the movie starts with Gunner going to the train station after he's resigned. And he's just so happy-go-lucky. He goes over and he sees oranges, and he buys oranges and chocolates and gives a little girl a chocolate. But, you know, onward they go. Gunner has this bag of oranges and a handful of chocolates. And all of a sudden, these soldiers come out of the train station led by these two nuns. And Gunner's like, who was that? And they're like, oh, they're refugees from the front line, right? And it's like, they're malnourished, right? They're going to get on the train to Berlin. And, you know, so Gunner sees just sort of this poor, deprived people. They've barely eaten. So he goes and he gives them his bag of oranges and chocolates.
He seems so nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, his whole time, right? He keeps bumping into all these different people and always wanting to do something. His intentions are always good, but they usually turn to disaster, right?
And you knew it. You know, the minute he turns down Pippi Longstocking, says, yeah, don't ever hide.
Like, he's a nice guy, but he's got other issues. They then we get into the train. Oh, I'm sorry. Before they get on the train, Henry is meeting with his girlfriend, Maria. And he's like, you know what, honey, we're going to be together someday, but I can't. In the Catholic Church, I can't get married if I'm divorced. I have to be widowed. That's okay. And he's like, I've been praying about it, and God wants me to be married. And he's trying to convince his girlfriend, Maria, to kill his wife on the train. Yep. And he's come up with this scheme where Maria will drop some drugs into her drink, and she'll get really woozy, and she'll be euphoric first, but she'll get woozy and just lure her to the door and push her out of the train. And it'll all be over with. So Henry is convincing Maria to get on the train, and she's reluctantly not wanting to kill. Henry brings out a wedding ring and says, look, we're going to get married someday. And, you know, she gets on the train, but then she's having second doubts. And so Henry jumps on the train and then all of a sudden realizes now he's stuck on the train because he was going to meet her in Berlin, right, after she killed the wife. So that's their story. That's the beginning of their story. Gunner is in his little train car, little suite, and in come Sexton and Pomp, right? And Sexton, you can tell, is just a jerk. He's miserable. He's absolutely horrible. And Pomp is like being so attentive and trying to get out his, you know, puts all the suitcases away. And then he asks for his paper. Then he asks for his drink. He asks for his food. And the food ends up being a flask, which was like a funny moment. And Gunner sort of is like, well, what are you doing? Like, why are you so mean? He's like, you know, it's in my blood and people aren't good. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, Gunner has this incredible, incredible optimism about the world. He's been quoting this philosopher, Wittgenstein, and he says, you know, nothing is necessarily what it appears to be. which really kind of sets up for the whole movie.
The whole movie, right? Yes, exactly.
The other thing, too, I don't remember, Bob, when Sexton says to Gunner, so what are you going to do when you get to Berlin? What are you going to do? What are you going to be? He's like, I don't know, maybe I'll be a mason apprentice. Maybe I'll learn how to build a wall or something like that.
So, I miss that.
Yeah. So we'll get to that later, but just remember that, everybody. So that's Sexton and Gunner. Henry is back on the train. Right. He's convinced his girlfriend to go through this whole thing. Right. They sort of have this passionate moment and they're having sex and she's groaning and he's groaning and move to the next car. And it's Henry's wife with this older woman who's going to be her seatmate. And they start talking about getting to know each other. Are they married? Are they not married? You know, what is happiness? What is not happiness? And Karen's like, oh, I found the perfect man. He would never be, you know, he would never betray me, right? And she's like, yeah, don't believe that, right? That's just like, you're a fool. You're being a fool. So they get to meet. And then
I kind of like that old lady.
She was my God. She's talking about all her husbands, right? I think she had 6 or 7. Maria and Henry are still plotting against the wife, right? It's getting to be dinner time. And Henry's like, this is what you do. Let's practice. I'll show you sort of how to sleight of hand to drop the drug into the drink. And, you know, it's like this. And she's having these doubts. And, you know, she says, well, what if I can't go through? He's like, oh, you can go through it. Don't worry. And she's like, and he's like, don't worry. If you don't go through it, I have a backup plan. Just lure her into the hall. And I have this needle full of drugs. And I'll, you know, drug her with this needle, and then we can still throw her from the train. So her husband has given her all these drugs. Suppose she has migraines, and the woman, the older woman she met, she's like, stop taking all those drugs. You don't need them. So she comes out of the bathroom to go to dinner, and in goes Gunner to use the bathroom, and he sees these pills in the trash that says migraines. And he's like, well, Poof has a migraine too. So he takes the pills out of there, takes it to Poof, sets it down, and he's like, oh, I need a cup of water. And so what ends up happening is Poof overindulges with the migraine pills. So now he's worried. Gunner's worried that he's drugged this guy and he's not sure what to do. And he's overly happy and going crazy. So Gunner starts looking for a doctor on the train.
This is where all the stories like intermix.
This is where it gets interesting, right? And I'll do my best, right? So Gunner's looking for a doctor. The doctor, who is curious about whether Maria can actually kill his wife, says he's going to follow her into the car and try to like look and spy in on them. Luckily, there's a guy dressed as Father Christmas coming through the door with a big bowl of soup who's taking it to the refugees. And is the soup spills all over the place. The guy gets his feet burned, right? The doctor says, let me help you. And then has the clever idea, I'm going to knock this guy out and steal the Father Christmas outfit on. So now the doctor goes to dinner, dressed as Santa, sits down and is sort of watching the whole thing unfold. So he's watching. Maria and Karen are having dinner. Karen gets distracted. Marie drops the pill in just like he's supposed to. The doctor, Henry's like, oh, good girl. Yeah, good girl. And you're like, oh, my God, he's going to kill her, right? She's going to really happen. Just as the woman, as soon as Karen went to go reach for the drink, Maria knocked it over. The girlfriend, and he's like, what's going on? Why is this happening? So he gets his needle out. He's ready to inject her. And all of a sudden, this woman sits down. Is like, oh, Father Christmas, let me tell. And starts kind of bending his ear and distracting him. But Maria gets up, goes to the bathroom, Karen gets up, goes after her. And so the first attempt at killing his wife fails.
Fails.
Double, right. Yep. But Gunner does make its way back into the train with the refugees. There's the two nuns there and they're sitting there helping as they're, Gunner walks into the train car with the refugees. They're throwing up.
A horrible situation.
They're throwing up. It's coming out of both ends and like they're, the conductor goes in first and says, what's going on? He's like, I don't know, some idiot gave them oranges and chocolate. Like
everything that follows him, it's just disastrous.
Going back to me, everything that what you think it looks like, it's something else. And so the gunner leaves, the conductor's still there, and the nun, the head nun, the mother superior says, to the conductor, "Can you kill him?"
She was great.
Can you just kill him right now? And so, you know, so the conductor goes and kind of starts looking for Gunner. I don't think he's going to kill him, but all of a sudden now Maria and Karen have left. They've gone back to their compartments. Father Christmas is following them. He's hiding around the corner and he's about to inject his wife Karen with the lethal dose or get her drugged out. But all of a sudden, Gunner's coming up the hallway. The conductor's coming up the hallway. Maria's coming up the hallway. And he doesn't know what to do. So he jumps out of the train and hangs on to the side. And the train's moving along. And all of a sudden, Gunner's in the hallway. And he looks outside and there's Father Christmas. There's the doctor dressed as Father Christmas looking through the window. So what does Gunner do? Pulls on the emergency brake. Everybody goes flying. And the conductor comes around and goes, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" He's like, I've had it with you. I mean, people can have a bad day, maybe an off day, but you don't mess with the brakes, right? There's a penalty. And he's like, "Do you have a good excuse? If not, I'm gonna take you to the police. What's your excuse?" He's like, "I saw Father Christmas." And it was like, what? His Father Christmas is out there. He's like, what? Did the reindeers have to take a break? Did the elves have to pee? Like, what's going on here? He's like, really? And so they go outside and they're looking up and down and looking up back and forth, but they see nobody. And so they get back on the train. The conductor starts writing them a ticket. Like, you're going to be in trouble when we get to Germany. You're going to be arrested. You can't do that. And so poor Gunner is just like, you know, I can't do anything. He's right. Hapless, just hapless. I'm just a fool. I want to help people. The doctor, obviously, and dressed as Santa, had latched himself to the bottom of the train. Although when the train starts to leave, he gets sort of drug a little bit. Yeah. But he does make it back onto the train. Gunner says, you know, I just want to end my life, right? I just want to just, you know, kill myself, right? And so he starts sucking on gas, right? So think about propane gas. So Gunner is now just going to suck on this gas. He's going to kill himself and he's just going to do it, just end it. And so he's there and he's sucking on and he's like, and he's like, he's not feeling anything. And then he realizes the hose the gas that he's turned on has not even connected to his hose. And he looks up at the train and he sees the gas line and he just looks at it and it's going across the top of the ceiling. He's like, I wonder where that's going. Well, it's going to the car with the refugees. The nun has now drank a bottle of scotch and and what is she going to have?
A cigarette.
And so now the soldier's dead. The lighter gets lit. Boom. Boom. All the poor refugees now are blowing up, right? So Gunner he's just a mess, right? He's now blowing up the refugees. Now, Maria has gone back to her cabin. She is kind of feeling bad for herself, right? Karen, in the meantime, gets out, starts walking down the path of the train, the aisle, and Henry confronts her. Starts to choke her, starts to yell at her about she needs to die, she wants to be happy, and they're tussling back and forth. Maria comes out of her cabin, sees this, starts to beat on him. There's a tussle back and forth, and Maria actually finds the needle and injects it into Henry, into the doctor, right? And so they toss him off the train. And right at that moment, there's this flashback to when they originally came out of the car. Maria had written a note to Karen saying, "He has drugs. He's trying to kill you." So, ever since they met in the hallway that first time, she's been knowing about Karen has known about Henry's intentions to kill her.
Yeah.
So they're pulling in. It's now Christmas Eve, right? They've made it to Berlin. They are pulling in. And they're all on the train. Gunner's arrested for probably killing the soldier, killing the refugees, killing Henry. But you see this, and you see Maria and Karen looking out the window, and you see these porters carrying wheelbarrows full of dead people. It's like, oh my gosh. But Karen and Marie at the end, right? They're sort of looking at each other, talking about everything that's happened, and they kiss each other, and they have fallen in love. And yeah. So Karen says, I've chosen, because Maria says, I wish you a good life. I hope you find the person you want to be with. And she says, well, it's you. And they kiss, and then the movie's sort of over, right? And so credits start to roll, right? And again, this movie was in 1945. It's Dutch to Berlin, 1961. And you see this guy with really long hair, sort of in an obvious prison outfit. And it's our good friend Gunner. And he is building the Berlin Wall.
He's building the Berlin Wall.
So he got to be his Mason apprentice after all. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the summary, Bob. I mean, it was, what a fun movie.
Yeah. Well, what's funny about it is in describing it, I was thinking some of it doesn't necessarily sound because it's like murder, yeah, and someone getting hurt. And it's really funny. Is it festive?
Yeah, what do you think?
Yes. I mean, I think it was. And it has so many elements. I mean, we didn't even give credit to the nuns and some of the conversation. Yeah. The fact that it all builds up to Christmas and Father Christmas is in it, all of that is, yes, it gives it a Christmas tone.
I totally agree. I think it's Christmas is part of the movie, and without it, I think it doesn't make it. And you're right. There's so many different dialogues and so many different characters along the way. I probably didn't do justice to all the funny parts.
Well, no, you can't. It's hard. But that's why it's good, because there's so many things going on. That's the beauty of so many different storylines.
Yeah. How'd you feel watching it?
You know what I would say? It made me like a throwback, like it did kind of feel like an older movie, and at some points like a Hitchcock movie and that. But then it would go back to comedy. So it was a great ride. Like, I enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah, and would you recommend it? Would you watch it in the future?
Yeah, in fact, as you were describing it, and as I'm seeing the scenes in the head, I go, I want to go back and watch it again. You know, and just the soldier part is just so funny.
It is funny. It
especially when you think of the time period that they put this in, and it's poor refugees, and the soldier has clearly come back from war.
I would watch it in the future, and would you recommend it?
Yes, I do. This is one clearly I'd say to anybody. You know what? This is a great, just kind of go for the ride.
Yeah.
Go out for the ride on the train. It's great.
Exactly. It's like it's like an hour and 40 minutes. I mean, this is a movie you could watch on a Friday night with a pretty good mix of people. Like, I would say it's PG. I laughed out loud even the second time I watched it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
Oh, well, I think we touched on this a little bit last time, but can I tell you how to say Merry Christmas in Swedish?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's real easy. God jul.
God jul.
Yep.
God jul. I can say.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yes.
After how many episodes?
So in Swedish, Merry Christmas can be translated as God jul. Phonetically, it's pronounced God jul. God in Swedish means happy, good, merry, while jul is the word for Christmas, right? God jul.
God jul.
This phrase is commonly used in Sweden to wish someone a happy Christmas, and jul is derived from the word jul. Some of the customs, right? We're going to start off with the food. Swedish people love and take their food seriously. They have a traditional jul board, which is a Christmas table, a smorgasbord, which I love smorgasbords. And it's eaten in rounds. So they go, which I love, right? I mean, who doesn't like to eat in rounds?
I know.
And there's different types of fish, pickled herring, lutfisk, salmon, as well as the inevitable different types of pickled herring. There's meat. There's a ham. It's called julsinka. That's ham that's covered with egg and breadcrumbs.
Oh, my goodness.
Right?
Yes.
That sounds delicious. Pork ribs, meatballs, prinskorv sausage. They also cook brown cabbage, beetroot salad.
Oh, my God.
Julst, which is Christmas cheese, Anisen fristelli, a casserole with potatoes and pickled sprouts and cream. I mean, the jul board will differ a little bit whether you're north or south or southern Sweden, with the south offers geese and duck and eel, while the north is a little bit more of the fish. I'm sorry, the north will be a little bit more reindeer, deer, and cloudberry jam, which they kill reindeer.
I know. Could you imagine on Christmas eating reindeer? I don't think that would go over very well.
Well, though, in Rare Exports, remember, that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
Was herding the reindeer for kill.
Interesting. I couldn't even imagine that.
Another tradition. I love this tradition. I just love this. Every year on December 24th at 3 p.m., half of Sweden sits down in front of the television to watch the 1958 Disney Christmas special, From All of Us to All of You. Or, as they say in Sweden, you ready?
Yeah.
Kalla Anka och han Oxkali och Gujul.
Whatever, it sounds good. Whatever.
But it's been airing without commercials at the same time on Christmas Eve since 1959.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
We don't even do that here, and it's a U.S. thing.
I know. The show consists of Jiminy Cricket presenting about a dozen Disney cartoons. It's typically one of the three most popular television events of the year. It can draw between 40% and 50% of the country tuning in to watch.
That's like Super Bowl, you know, yeah. Level.
You know, families sit down with their family and friends and watch the same show, right? There's some local twists. The host will present it, maybe play the role of Uncle Walt in the original Walt Disney series and kind of juice it up a little bit. But I just think that's so tender. I just think that is one of the sweetest, endearing things that we've done or heard about a tradition.
Well, and what you love, if you think about it, it's been going on since 59. So you're now on the third or fourth generation of people saying, oh, this is what I did when I was a kid. We watched this. And I can imagine like grandma and grandpa, mom and dad, everybody can like probably recite all the Donald Duck lines or whatever it is that's in there.
Exactly.
Doesn't it make you want to go watch this cartoon and go, what is it that you... you
know? Well, I sort of remember it. Now,
oh, you do?
I do. And I do want to go back and at least watch some of it. I mean, I remember... I remember Jiminy Cricket, right?
Oh, yeah.
I just think it's amazing that it's been going on that long.
Maybe Howard has it on DVD.
I'll ask him. The other thing that they the Javla goat is a traditional Christmas display erected annually at the Castle Square in the central Gava, Sweden. That display is a giant version of the traditional Yule goat made of straw. It's erected each year by the local community at the beginning of Advent over a period of 2 days. The goat has been the subject of repeated arson attacks. Okay. Despite security measures at a nearby fire station, the goat has been burned to the ground most years since it's appeared in 1966. So they leave watching Disney and they go burn the goat.
Think about this. They spent 2 days erecting this giant goat. They have a fire station nearby and still it burns down every year.
Unbelievable.
Okay.
Well,
when you're driving by my house next year, you might see a large flaming goat in the front yard.
Well, you know, what's interesting, the Yule goat, maybe we'll talk about it, but the Yule goat, like the wooden Yule goat, is sort of a practical joke they play on each other. So you try to catch when your neighbor's not there, and you build or you bring a wooden or plastic goat and you put it on their lawn. So it's sort of a little thing they do during the holidays as well.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
I don't think they burn it on your front lawn. So what do they drink, right? Julmust is a...
I know, Jul, that means Christmas something, right? Christmas must.
It's a soft drink that is consumed in Sweden around Christmas. 45 million liters of Julmust are consumed in December, which is about 75% of the yearly total.
Could you imagine having a product that's 75 is sold in 1 month?
Well, they're all watching Disney and burning the damn goat down, Bob. It's a non-alcoholic alternative to beer. That's why we don't know.
Oh, yeah, I've never
had it. But it contains hops, which gives it a slight bitterness. And in Sweden, Julmust outsells Coca-Cola during the Christmas season. In fact, the consumption of Coca-Cola drops by almost 50% over the holidays.
I am shocked that Coca-Cola hasn't bought Julmust, you know, and got rid of it.
I guess. So in Sweden, Santa is called Tomten, which is actually translated as the gnome. Oh. His full name is Jul Tomten, the Yule gnome. He looks like a small human. He's a well-meaning goat spreading cheer on Christmas. Hey, want to listen to some music from Sweden?
I would love to hear some Swedish music.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
Let's listen to this song. The title of the song tonight is Santa, I Want a Perfect Christmas.
När man är liten, tomten, jag vill ha en riktig jul. Med längtan och hopp, och man är nyfiken. Tomten, jag vill ha en riktig jul. En sån som man har. När man är liten, tomten, jag vill ha en riktig jul.
So, in Swedish, the name of the song is Tomten, jag vill ha en riktig jul. That's probably not really it. But it's a song about the spirit of joy and anticipation and generosity. It was written in 1982, and the lyrics expresses a child's wish for a traditional and sincere Christmas. In the song, the video, children are asking for presents from Santa, such as radio-controlled airplane, a pinball game, a table soccer, and Donkey Kong.
That song, you know, it's so funny because it has like a big band kind of feel. We've gone last episode, I think it was rap.
Yes.
And now this was kind of big, but it kind of, I like this one. This was jazzy.
Yep. So a question, right? I find it interesting that the Nordic countries, it's very serious how goats play a key and central role in their Christmas traditions. We've seen a Santa-like goat figure dressing up like goats, goat ornaments, and here the giant goat display that people bring down. But I'm curious why this is the case. It's not like goats are in the nativity scene. Do you have any idea? I asked my friend Howard. He has no idea, but...
Yeah. I know. And I guess what I would wonder is goats must be central to their economy, maybe? Yeah. Because the goat figure, the goat Santa figure, and then like some of the earlier ones we were talking about where, people would dress up like goats and go from door to door. And for the life of me, I can't connect a goat to Christmas at all.
The only thing I could find is that there's a Yule goat that is supposed to be invisible. That's supposed to be legend. The legend is, right, is like the Yule goat comes down a couple of days before Christmas and makes sure everything is okay. And that, like, you can't see it. It's invisible. But it's the goat reports back to Joel Topton as to like who's the good, who's bad. And so it's sort of like it's a secret agent of Santa, the Yule goat.
But I would, you know, it still makes me think, well, who first said, you know, some of the other legends you can kind of see where they came from.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? This one, I struggle because, and I don't know if it was one of our previous episodes or I was reading somewhere, but there's also where they do the last harvest, they make a goat ornament or something, and then they put it on the next year's tree. It's amazing how common goats are through all these
Norwegian countries.
Yeah. I want to add a goat to my nativity scene now.
Oh, we're going to get a goat on your lawn. It may or may not be on fire, Bob. All right. Well, Bob, it's been fun talking about this movie tonight. A good time. Last thing I'd say is Christmas is the time of year when human connectivity sets the world aglow.
Oh, Mark, that's sweet. That's touching. In the same way that the Gunner set pretty much everything aglow on that train.
Well, as Gunner said, I mean, I have to go back to like the very beginning. Like again, I didn't catch it necessarily on the first time I watched it, but his quote in the very beginning, when he tells the being the miserable old guy that not everything you see is what it appears to be. And like, again, couldn't find a nicer guy in the whole wide world who killed a bunch of people.
Yeah. How perfect. Talking about quotes, perfect quote for the movie, perfect quote for Christmas to end the show.
All right, Bob, we'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Actually, we're done.
Done, done.
It's over. Over, over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over. It's over. It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.